Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Nuclear weapons experts issue a proclamation on nuclear war. The world's first climate visa. And the European Union is accused of complicity in Israel's assault in Gaza. First, the nuclear weapons experts proclamation. On July 16, about 80 years since the Trinity nuclear test, 20 Nobel laureates and about 60 leading nuclear experts issued a declaration on the prevention of nuclear war. The experts warn that the nuclear danger remains very high, and they urge several steps, besides the elimination of all nuclear weapons, to mitigate the danger. Here are just a few of them. We call on all states to reiterate their commitment to a moratorium on nuclear explosive testing and do what is necessary to secure the prompt entry into force of the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. Next, we call on Russia and the U.S. to immediately enter into negotiations on a successor to the 2010 New Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, remain committed to the treaty's central limits in the meantime, and expand dialogue. We call on China to immediately enter into substantive and sustained discussions on their rapidly expanding nuclear arsenal. Next, we call on all states to engage in increased cooperative dialogue on the scientific, legal, and military implications of artificial intelligence and other advanced technologies. We call on all nuclear-armed states to ensure meaningful and enhanced human control and oversight over nuclear command and control. And last, with regard to the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, we call on every nation to publicly recommit to all non-proliferation and disarmament objectives and obligations in the treaty, and reject and condemn proliferation by any state, including allies. Tuvalu, a country consisting of 9 atolls and islands, about halfway between Hawaii and Australia, is only 2 meters above sea level. It faces risks of permanent inundation from rising ocean levels. Over half of Funafuti, the capital, could be regularly flooded by tidal surges by 2050, according to the UN. Tuvalu is now hoping to acquire the world's first climate migration visa that will allow 280 citizens to move every year to Australia, where they will have the right to live, study, and work without restriction. The most recent data shows that Tuvalu has a population of just over 11,000, and already over half the population has submitted applications to move. The permanent residency pathway is a key feature of the Falapili Union, a treaty entered into by Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and his Tuvaluan counterpart Filito Teo in August 2024. Under the pact, Australia would support Tuvalu in adapting to climate change and help during natural disasters. But the climate visa isn't just about Australian generosity, it's also about China. Australia would have veto power over any security arrangements the island nation seeks to establish with other countries. The reference is to a Chinese base in a part of the Pacific that Beijing has been actively engaged in diplomatically and economically. Tuvalu currently recognizes Taiwan as China, but as happened in the Solomon Islands, a change of government could lead to a change in China policy and security ties that would shift from Australia to China. As a side note, just as Tuvalu might become the first country to be lost to the climate crisis, Kabul, Afghanistan, might be the first capital city to run out of water. That's according to the Mercy Corps' reporting. Population growth, the climate crisis, and over-extraction of water are said to be responsible. Kabul citizens must pay a high price for water and use it sparingly. The Mercy Corps' program director in Afghanistan says, quote, "It's a health crisis, an economic crisis, and a humanitarian emergency all in one." Next, the European Union is accused of complicity in Israel's assault in Gaza. The UN Special Rapporteur on Occupied Palestine accused the EU of, quote, "consciously supporting Israel's genocide of the Palestinians," unquote, by refusing to suspend the EU-Israel Association Agreement. That agreement, which covers political and economic relations, includes a binding clause requiring respect for human rights and democratic principles. EU foreign ministers failed to reach consensus on suspending the agreement and imposing sanctions on Israel, starting with an arms embargo. This news comes as killings of desperately hungry people in Gaza are rising fast. Over the weekend, 79 Gazans were killed by the Israeli Defense Forces when a UN Food for Peace truck was mobbed in northern Gaza. As usual in such incidents, the IDF did not acknowledge the figure and merely said troops fired warning shots. The Israeli authorities are starving civilians in Gaza, the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees said in a post on X. Among them are 1 million children. In other news, the Pentagon spells out its insecurity. The Defense Department has chosen not to attend an annual meeting of the Aspen Security Forum, which typically attracts policy wonks, journalists, and military figures for open-ended discussions. The Pentagon's reason for not attending reveals both extraordinary insecurity and deep-seated hostility. A Pentagon press secretary said, quote, "The Department of Defense has no interest in legitimizing an organization that has invited former officials who have been the architects of chaos abroad and failure at home. They are antithetical to the America First values of this administration. Senior representatives of the Department of Defense will no longer be participating in an event that promotes, now get this, the evil of globalism, disdain for our great country, and hatred for the President of the United States," unquote. In short, the Pentagon will only be represented at events hosted by loyal functionaries who love Donald Trump. As the New York Times points out in reporting this news, use of the word evil has become a fixture in the administration's vocabulary. Critics of the Trump regime are automatically evil. That's what dictators say. China extends its forced labor policy in Xinjiang. A joint investigation by the New York Times, the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, and Der Spiegel in Germany has revealed that Uyghurs are being sent out of their homeland, Xinjiang, in China's far west, on government work programs more widely than previously documented. This makes identifying companies that are using Uyghur labor much harder. The investigation found that 70 factories located all across China are employing forced labor from Xinjiang. Most of the factories are distant from Xinjiang, such as several in Guangdong province in the southeast coast. As usual, Chinese officials deny that forced labor exists and insist that Uyghurs are being treated with an eye to their security and well-being. Being sent far off for labor is a way to defeat idleness, officials say. The Chinese embassy in Washington said the government's policies make the region safer. Xinjiang-related issues are not human rights issues at all, but in essence about countering violent terrorism and separatism, a statement said. U.S.-China trade tensions are easing. In stark contrast with tit-for-tat tariff increases a month ago, U.S.-China trade is moving in a more positive direction. China has eased access to rare earth minerals, and the U.S. has approved sales of advanced, but not the most advanced, AI chips from NVIDIA to China. U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent acknowledged the Minerals for Chips exchange, saying, quote, "It's all part of a mosaic." The deal still leaves plenty of trade issues to negotiate, starting with the 30% tariff on Chinese imports. As usual, Trump's personal interest is involved. He evidently is desperate to visit China, having failed to get an invitation from Xi Jinping at the height of the trade war. More on the trade war, a few trade deals, but more tariff hikes to come. Apart from the ongoing exchanges with China, all that President Trump can claim in his tariff war so far is framework agreements with Britain, Vietnam, and Indonesia, and tariff rate agreements with the Philippines and Japan. Even the agreement with Vietnam is shaky, as the Vietnamese are saying that what is on paper is not what they bargained for. The Philippines president was just in Washington seeking a trade deal, but his effort to get a low tariff rate failed. The Philippines will face a 19% U.S. tariff rate, just a 1% reduction from Trump's initial rate, while U.S. exports to the Philippines will be tariff-free. As for Japan, Trump agreed to reduce the tariff rate from 25% to 15% and says Japan is committed to $550 billion in investments in the United States. But a photo of Trump's announcement card taken from behind him shows different figures for both the tariff rate and the investment pledge. As for the Japanese, they're not at all happy. They believe they've been bullied. Trump's tariffs are now expected to hit an average effective rate of 20.6%, the highest since 1910. The inflationary impact is already happening, contrary to the administration's denials and obfuscations. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell has become Trump's latest favorite target for refusing to drop interest rates. Powell has made clear that he views the tariffs as likely to raise consumer prices, hence be inflationary, and won't lower interest rates merely to please Trump. Most observers believe that should Trump fire Powell, a step that is probably illegal, the U.S. economy will be in much worse shape than it already is. U.S.-Iran nuclear talks have vanished. No talks are taking place, so far as anyone outside the administration can tell. It evidently has no plans to resume talks. Trump seems to have decided that the bombing of Iran was successful and that the Iranians will come running at some point to make a deal whose terms he will dictate. Meantime, Iran will suffer from tightening sanctions from the Europeans as well as from the U.S. Iran's chief points of contention are that negotiations must allow for a certain level of uranium enrichment and provide security guarantees against a resumption of attacks from Israel. The Trump administration seems highly unlikely to satisfy either of those requirements. Britain lowers the voting age to 16. Britain will lower the voting age from 18 to 16 by the next national election as part of measures to increase democratic participation. The changes must be approved by Parliament. The next national election must be held by 2029. The centre-left Labour Party pledged before it was elected in July 2024 to lower the voting age for elections to Britain's Parliament. Scotland and Wales already let 16 and 17-year-olds vote in local and regional elections. Germany and Belgium allow voting at 16 in European Parliament elections. Japan's ruling party suffers a defeat in the upper house. Prime Minister Ishiba Shigeru's Liberal Democratic Party lost its majority in the Japanese parliament's upper house in elections July 20th. It was the party's second major defeat, having lost control of the lower house last October. Ishiba vows to carry on, but the election loss could trigger his resignation or political deadlock in parliament, since any legislation will require that the Liberal Democratic Party and its partner Kometo find a third party to form a majority. The main winners in the election are the populist opposition parties, especially the Democratic Party for the People and Sanseito. The right-wing Sanseito's candidates campaigned on the slogan Japanese First, signaling an anti-immigrant posture that worries foreign residents in Japan. Finally, two updates, first from Brazil. The U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has reportedly stripped 8 of Brazil's 11 Supreme Court judges of their U.S. visas as the White House escalates its campaign to help the country's former president, Jair Bolsonaro, avoid justice over his alleged attempt to seize power with a military coup. Bolsonaro faces major jail time if, as expected, he is convicted. Brazil's president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, has refused to cave in to Trump's pressure tactics, which include a 50% tariff rate on Brazilian exports to the U.S. He said, quote, "Interference in another country's justice system is unacceptable and offends the basic principles of national sovereignty and respect between nations." A prominent Brazilian academic said Trump's interference is, quote, "a political gift for Lula, who now gets to credibly present himself as a symbol of national resistance while leaving his opponents scrambling to choose between loyalty to Bolsonaro and the economic interests of their own base," unquote. Lula had the final word, saying, quote, "If Trump was a Brazilian, and if he did what happened at Capitol Hill," referring to the attempted coup on January 6, he'd also be on trial in Brazil. And finally, Trump's executive order to impose sanctions on judges of the International Criminal Court has been blocked by a federal judge. The ruling follows an April lawsuit by two human rights advocates challenging Trump's February 6 order authorizing sanctions on people who work on the International Criminal Court's investigations of U.S. citizens or U.S. allies, such as Israel. The judge in the case said Trump's order violates free speech. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.